Welcome to the Educause podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the Educause 2008 annual conference. Participants include Amy Alcock, web developer within the Medical Education Technology Unit at Queen's University, Sheila Pynchon, educational developer in the Office of Health Sciences Education at Queen's University, and Elaine Van Mealy, director of the Office of Health Services Education at Queen's University. The session is entitled Inspiring Innovative Teaching Ideas Through the E-Teaching Collaborative.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Orlando. My name is Andrew Bonamici. I'm Associate University Librarian for Instructional Services at the University of Oregon, and I'm very pleased to convene today's session, which is part of the Teaching and Learning track. The title is Inspiring Innovative Teaching Ideas Through the E-Learning Collaborative. Our presenters today are from Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. Amy Alcock is web developer in the Medical Educational Technology Unit. Sheila Pynchon is educational developer in the Office of Health Sciences Education. And Elaine Van Mel is director of the Office of Health Services Education at Queen's University. I'll let you give more detailed introductions, but before we start, I want to remind everyone, and I'll try to remind you again, at the end of our presentation today, we're part of a community, and we need to do our duty and fill out the evaluation forms. That's going to be very important, not only for Educause, but for our presenters, and it will inform other presentations in the future. So please, you can do that at the kiosks outside, and you can go online after you get back home if that's easier for you. So with no further ado, I'll turn it over to our panel from Queen's University. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Andrew. Can you all hear me all right back there? Sounds okay. Yeah? Good? Perfect. Thank you. So good afternoon, and I want to welcome you all to this session. But in particular, I want to commend you for being here on what so far has been the warmest and the sunniest day of the conference. I think you're doing really, really well. Now, we have to look forward to going home to 23 inches of snow that came just the other day. So as you've already heard, yes, we are from Canada, only the cold north. And so we're from Kingston, Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. And that's just the other side of Lake Ontario, north side of Lake Ontario, just across the lake from Syracuse. So you get a sense of where we're situated. We're in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Queen's University. And what that means is that we're in a faculty that brings together medicine, nursing, rehabilitation therapy, as well as the life sciences. But I think what you're going to find is that what we're going to talk about today will be equally appropriate across whatever context you're working in education. So we'll talk about examples from health sciences, but hopefully it will apply to you as well, however it is you're situated within your own university. So, as Andrew already said in the introduction, we have a variety of resources here. So we have Amy Alcock, who is our web developer within our Medical Education Technology Unit, Sheila Pynchon, who's the educational developer, and one of our empty seats actually is devoted to Sarah Wickett, who we're quite fortunate to have, an informatics librarian who's also part of our team. Sarah had a baby, so she's at home and has a little bit of different priority right now today, but she's a very vital part of our team, and we're going to talk about how that informatics librarian fits in as well in terms of the e-teaching collaborative. So we're going to talk today about the e-teaching collaborative and our approach to how we bring this variety of resources together to actually support faculty in doing innovative things in their teaching. So in our presentation today, first of all, there's the website where it's available. So for those of you who actually want to follow along with what we're doing, you're welcome to bring the website up now. Or if you want to go to our presentation a little bit later after the session, all the slides are available there for you. So here's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk a little bit more about who we actually are. And then we're going to talk about how do we operate, how do we actually come together to form this team process. We're going to give you some examples of services, and those examples are going to be what we do individually, but then how is it that we bring those individual services together to operate as a team. And then at the end, We're going to talk a little bit about measuring the impact and the evaluation of our service. And I think that that's the one that's probably our biggest challenge right now and where we'll be focusing some of our time on over the next little while. We've only really been together for about a year and a half in terms of this team. And so really measuring the impact is something we'll be looking at in the not too distant future. We had hoped to make this session fairly interactive, but what we've been finding in these presentations is that, first of all, the room setup isn't really conducive to getting everybody into groups. And the other thing is that we're not well mic'd. We're kind of tethered to this mic up here, and it's really hard for you guys to hear each other. So we decided, unfortunately, to forgo the interaction, although we have a wonderful faculty member who makes the case that you can do active learning on your own. She calls it active lonely learning. And the key to it, she says, is to have really good questions. So what we'd like to encourage you to do is just to follow these guiding questions as we go along. So as we talk about our challenges, ask yourselves, are these challenges similar to what it is you're facing, or do you have something different in front of you? And then also, what strategies do you have to meet these challenges? You may be doing something different than we're doing. But at the same time, is there something today that we're talking about in terms of the e-teaching collaborative and how we function that you can actually take away and bring back to your own institution as well? So that's the active learning part, and we hope that those questions will kind of shape your thinking as we go through. So we'd like to really start the presentation talking about some of the challenges that faced us in terms of why it is we came together. And perhaps some of these will be familiar to you as well. First of all, we found that as individuals, we were really operating as silos. And sometimes, in fact, we were doing the same thing. So we sometimes operated a little bit in terms of duplicating services. Needless to say, that if we were duplicating and working in silos, it wasn't always clear to faculty who should they be going to for support in different services. And so the faculty were kind of confused in terms of who to approach. So we wanted to create a process where we could work effectively with faculty, and then the benefit would be that we would be able to maximize the use of limited resources. Now, I have to say, in terms of limited resources, we were at a session yesterday where they talked about a technology unit where they had 75 staff. Yeah, that's exactly what I did. Yeah, I know. A bunch of us almost kind of fell off our chair when we heard that. I don't know how that works for you. Maybe some of you are that privileged as well. What you're going to hear in terms of our resources today is kind of it. Kind of three core staff. And then we'll pull in resources as we need them. But we certainly aren't privileged to have 75 staff to work with. So really this limited resources was a big challenge that drove us to get together. I think as well, one of our challenges is around the teaching challenges. And I think what you'll find, and I really hope you take this away as one of our main messages, is that we always start with the teaching challenge. And so we're always looking to help teachers shape their teaching, find out what the issue is, and find out how can we help them to bring something new into their teaching. And so it's really the teaching and then how the technology can help to support innovation in teaching. That's our main focus as we work together as a team. So again, just to emphasize the team, we started with the three silos, and now we have the team coming together. And Sheila's going to talk specifically about the process that we use because we have a very consistent process. But again, I think it's important to say that we begin with the planning around teaching. So you see the educational developer front and center, really planning and decision-making around teaching. And then we bring the technology in, either through the informatics librarian or in through the web developer in terms of how do we use technology as a solution to address the teaching issue. And I think that's really the unique part of what we do. And so we really try and bring together and provide faculty with one-stop access to a variety of expertise, and then we work as a team to help them enhance teaching and learning through innovative uses of technology. So that gives you a bit of an overview of who we are and what we're about. And I'm going to turn it over to Sheila now, and she's going to talk about the process that we use as we actually work together.
Hello. We have divided the way we work into three categories. And I'd love to be able to say we started off with these three categories in mind, but they've actually evolved. And about a year ago, we stopped and said, let's look at our process. Let's be systematic about it, and let's be consistent. So we divide our work into these three categories. How we communicate, communication networks with faculty, how we work together, so our work process, because we are in different buildings, different budgets, and how we support faculty in their needs. And these all come together to be what we hope is responsive, faculty-centered support. The initiatives come from them. So if we look at our communication networks, how do people find out about us? How do faculty know we exist and where to go? And we've done some marketing, so that's the bookmarks, the posters, but our most successful strategy has been, we have 16 departments in the School of Medicine, for example, and we have visited 10 departments at departmental rounds. And we talk to them about who we are, but we also talk to them about what we do and what we can do for them explicitly. And if we have an ambassador in the group, we use them as an example to show what we've been able to do. In terms of faculty support, our starting point and still one of our most successful methods is our website. And this website was, it's very helpful to have a web developer on your team. This website was designed by Amy, and it has been extremely effective. And with it, we're able to highlight the new personalized sort of custom services that have grown up. We're also able to tell people who we are. We put our success stories on, and our hope is that we'll be able to bring these success stories into more of a mentorship role. And we also tell them how to contact us. So in terms of contact, we often hear from faculty. We have a web-based form that they can access through the website. That isn't as popular as email or stopping us in the hallway. Hi, you know you did that talk on... I was thinking about that, so informal conversation. We respond in three ways. Individually, we might say, okay, this is something I can handle on my own, no need to bother the others. Often, we say, this is something I can handle on my own, but I'm going to CC the others in case they want to jump in. And more frequently, we've been saying, okay, this we need the team for. Thank goodness for the team. Let's all get together. And often we meet with faculty and then communicate with via email from then on. Amy's going to talk to you about our workflow.
Okay, so in terms of how we work with each other, the whole thing started out was when we found ourselves together in meetings at the same room. We started talking and we realized the commonalities we had in the work and the ways that we could possibly work together. So when we decided to organize as a group, the first thing we did is we set up monthly meetings because we found that it was just valuable for us to sit down in the same room and talk together. And in this way, we sort of became a self-organizing community. So we continued, once we formally organized as a group, to have these meetings, but also to have a rotating chair schedule because there wasn't somebody in our group that was sort of the leader or the administrator. We all sort of had a vested interest in this, so we decided to divide up the responsibility of chairing accordingly, and also sharing the task of minute-taking as well. Something else that we did to work together, because we are in separate buildings, was we created a wiki as a place for us to go online and collaborate. So this became a place for us to organize our meeting agendas. So by using a wiki, we could say, you know, here's the agenda, and over the month, everybody would log in and add their items. So the agenda kind of grew as things came up over the month. And we also posted the minutes there. So it became an archive for the things that we were working on and a way for us to document our progress. It also became a place for us to collaborate, and one of the things that we've both been most successful collaborating on in the wiki has been conference abstracts. So somebody will post the first draft, and we'll all log in and add changes, and a wiki's really been conducive to that. And we found that although we do use email a lot to communicate, that for working on something like an abstract to collaborate on, the wiki really was a great place to do that. And the wiki, sort of the reason that I'm talking about the wiki is that I've been a big proponent of it, and it made sense for me, and it made sense for Sarah, the informatics librarian, and we were always sort of, I'm known as saying, put it on the wiki, because it was a bit of a different way to work through things if you're sort of used to collaborating on things via email, but it's nice to have the archive and the space to use it. So that has been the main way that we've been able to work together.
Elaine and I are going to buy Amy a t-shirt that says, put it on the wiki. We wish we could say we were the early adopters. We hope we're not the laggards. We're figuring it out. We're using it. And soon we'll be able to use it for the purpose that it was designed for. So we're getting there. I wanted to talk to you about two models or principles, sets of principles that we use. And we've had these in place to work with faculty on innovation. Innovation with technology and innovation in education. And this is a model that we've developed. It came from an early model that Elaine developed. And interestingly enough, we worked collaboratively on this model. We call it the RIPE model. It starts off with think about the teaching. So it doesn't start off with technology. And the interesting thing is that our technologists, as well as our educational developers, as well as our librarians, have adopted this model. What is the teaching issue? Reflect on that. How then, in step two, can we match the technology to that issue? So I say to Amy that she has a backpack of technological tools, software applications, all kinds of strategies that she can match up when a faculty member approaches her with an educational issue. But that is step two, that matching up. I'm starting to accumulate a little teeny baggie of those technological tools and hope to increase that. Step three is helping faculty put the technology into place effectively, and sometimes that means helping them do it individually, and other times it means finding support for them with our fairly limited resources. Step four is the step that a lot of people, including ourselves, often put to one side, and that's evaluation. We have a faculty member who still uses a slide carousel, and she is a wonderful physician and a really good teacher, and somebody who has just recently saved the life of a very good friend of mine. And so I cannot fault her for her slide carousel because it seems to work for her. And her point is this: show me how changing from the slide carousel is going to make me a better teacher. Show me the money. Document that for me. She's a researcher as well. She's got a good point. So how do we evaluate the success of our innovations with technology and in teaching? How can we show that? And it's something we're struggling with as a team. We have recently started to consider how we can demonstrate the success of our team and the success of our projects. And then, of course, once you collect your data in evaluation, you can move back to reflection. How can I make this better? What can I do differently? And the process starts again. The other key component of our approach is three teaching principles: relevance, integration, and interactivity. And we have actually gotten to the point where our curriculum leaders, all physicians and research scientists, will say, okay, right, it's RII. RII. Relevance. We say to our faculty, Dr. Osler said, start with a patient. Your students want to know, how does this learning connect with the patient? and then with integration, your students are asking, how does this learning fit in? Does it connect to learning I've had in the past? Where is it going? Does it connect to future learning? And interactivity, how am I learning? Am I sitting there listening to you? Or am I applying and extending the learning? We have tried to make this a very consistent message. Our technologists, our librarians, our educators, and now our curriculum leaders are all using these as starting points to begin any innovation in using technology and education. What we'd like to do next is give you three examples, an example for each of us, of how we work individually with faculty, and then we'd like to look at some examples of how we work with how we work as a team with faculty. So the first example is something that I might do. And this actually comes from a project where I was called in to work on a community service project for our medical students. We'd been doing it for 6 years, and for 6 years the students had complained about it. And so my aim was to focus and improve the learning in this project. I started off by looking at the learning objectives, and I tried to clarify those with an advisory team of faculty and students. And then I went to work on developing teaching and learning methodology again with this advisory group, and we moved to a student-directed group project with faculty mentors. And lastly, we looked at assessment, something our faculty sometimes forget, and so we looked at aligning the assessment with the learning objectives. So, just as an example, when I took on the project, there were 14 learning objectives, or perhaps you might call them outcomes, scattered over three different documents. So students and faculty really didn't know. They were all good, though, really good. But with this advisory team, I brought that number down to three, because three is much more manageable, and it was these were the takeaway points. So that's, and then from then on, we worked on the teaching and learning and the assessment. Now, you're probably sitting there going, oh, yeah, where's the technology? Well, interestingly enough, the technology evolved out of this. We've created a website that the students have actually collaborated on, and also a database to house the community services, to house their final projects. And the students have begun to demonstrate, to showcase their projects in multimedia, film, and a variety of other ways.
Okay, I'm going to speak a bit about Sarah's role as the health informatics librarian, and her role is really to find opportunities where images and multimedia can be used to help enhance the teaching. And in terms of her role, she primarily goes out and locates the resources online. So she has a wonderful list of health-related websites and repositories, and she's also a really amazing searcher. And I thought I was pretty good at Googling until I saw some of the things that Sarah was able to find just through searching and her knowledge with advanced search options. And then once the images are found, she has a tremendous understanding of copyright, so she's able to help our faculty understand when and how they can use these images and resources. And then finally, her role is to help incorporate the resources into the presentation. And this is something that we work on together in terms of, you know, embedding an image in a PowerPoint or bringing sound in or even just playing multimedia in the classroom. So I'm going to give you an example of a project that she worked on with one of our professors who wanted to improve the quality of the images in his slide. So this is the before slide. And then this is the image that she was able to find. So it's better quality, and it's labeled, and it's also annotated. And another example, this is the before slide. And then, sorry for the graphic nature of it, but this is, you kind of get used to it when you work in a school of medicine, but it did take me a while, so I'm aware of that. So those are just two examples of her ability to find images as well as, and she's able to find videos as well. So that's what the kind of services Sarah provides. And my role as a web developer here, as Sheila mentioned, I sort of have a backpack of tools. And when faculty come to me, my role is to really help match the teaching with the technology. So one example is a professor came to me and he said, you know, I'd really like to have a more interactive session in class and have some time for discussion, but there's so much foundational information I need to teach the students. I didn't know how can I do this and how can technology help? So what the solution was is that we took the foundational information and we put it online in a web-based presentation and then asked the students to watch it before class, and then they came to class prepared to have a discussion and talk about some cases based on the material that they'd viewed beforehand. So what we did is we used a tool called Articulate Presenter in this case. So what he was able to do was sit in his office, use the record narration feature of PowerPoint to record a 20-minute talk, and then I used Articulate Presenter to publish the PowerPoint as a flash file and put it online so that students could view it beforehand, and we were able to add self-assessment. So this way students could access it beforehand and at their own pace, and then they came to class prepared to have a discussion. So, and this is just a screenshot of the module as it looked in Articulate Presenter with a bit of a quiz. We've given you an idea of sort of how we work individually, but the real neat stuff starts to happen when we work together. So one example of how we've worked together was professor came to us through our PowerPoint help service, sort of with this idea of improving our PowerPoints for teaching. But once we sat down and spoke with her, we realized that there was a lot more going on than just fixing up her PowerPoint slides. So we did help her out with that. I helped her a bit out with the design. Sarah was able to find some images with her. But through discussions with the team, we realized that she wanted to get the students thinking about things before the session. So we helped her create an online case that the students read beforehand with the expectation that they come prepared to class to discuss it. And then during class, we used clickers to ask the students questions about the case during the presentation. And then afterwards, I worked with her to create an online quiz so that the students could do some self-assessment to ensure that they understood what was being taught in the class. So that's just one example of how we work together, and we each bring our skills and resources to a project.
Dr. Schultz is a dream person to work with. She is the faculty member we all really hope we'll encounter. And she's busy finding new ways to improve her teaching and incorporate technology into it. Whenever we give a workshop, she thinks to herself, how can I do that? We'd like to share another example with you. It didn't start off as a dream. This is our largest group of faculty and our largest block, 1,600 hours of pupil-teacher contact in the exciting world of neuroscience. And they called us in after they read the student evaluations and, to their everlasting credit, said, we have to make drastic changes. So I was the point person, and I'd met with them for about 5 minutes. And then I realized, I have a team. Thank goodness I have a team that can help me with this. And so we were able to bring the team in. For those of you who do work alone, it is such a relief to know that you have other experts to bring in and bounce ideas off of and help. We worked together. As the point person, I started working with them on some curriculum initiatives. They're up there. We had a lot of fun. But in my former life, I was the coordinator of online development in our Faculty of Education. And I do really like using technology when it's appropriate and when it matches the learning. And so I was able to ask Amy to help us build an interface so that the students could see the results of all this curriculum innovation, the new themes that the faculty had put together, the introductory cases and the concluding cases, the concluding formative assessment each week. And so that website design is going to be a very, very useful tool for our students. I'm not sure Amy knows this yet, but now that we've got the faculty sold on cases, the next step is online cases. I think there are 45 faculty in this teaching in this block, and so she's going to have a lot of exciting work ahead of her. We've been able to bring Sarah in with her expertise in multimedia, and we've been able to help with our PowerPoint slide service, which is an individual service for faculty where we take a look at their presentation, their lectures, and then work with them on it. We also did a customized clicker workshop for them. 10 of the neuroscience faculty came to a workshop on how to use clickers and how to integrate that to make the learning more interactive. I think our success has been in our customization and our responsiveness. I'd like to say something here about that responsiveness. We work with 496 clinicians and research scientists. Now, we don't work with all of them yet. However, we have the utmost respect for them. We would no more think of ridiculing them or being scornful about their lack of expertise in teaching or technology. These are internationally known research scientists and medical practitioners. And not only are they in the 21st century, but some of them are pushing the boundaries of the 22nd century in their field. And so if they need to start at PowerPoint, that's where we go. We do use that as a starting point for our dialogue to increase the use of effective teaching strategy and innovations in technology. But we go to where they are. And I think that has been one of the key features of our responsiveness. We've customized our PowerPoint help service so that it now meets their needs and also ours in leading them into new ideas. And we have now done Clicker support service workshops for a number of teams. Our hope there is that, and we've heard this more and more, faculty are saying, oh, it's okay, I can show you how to do this. And frankly, we're in the business of becoming redundant. We would like them to be helping each other and to learn from each other. And so we are intending to formalize this sort of phenomenon into a more formal mentorship process. And lastly, we are customizing the workshops. And so we've moved from lunchtime seminars that had a population of one to an average of 20 to 24 faculty members at each workshop, and with requests for more. So that does seem to be quite an improvement in that kind of effective delivery.
So I hope you get this sense that we're very much an evolving group. And I think what's always such a pleasure about doing a presentation like this is we get to make sense of what we're doing after the fact and then put it all together and say, wow, yeah, that sounds really good. Even though as we're evolving, it's not necessarily all that logical. And so again, we've been in operation for about a year and a half. And as I began the presentation with in the beginning saying, I think that our real challenge now is in looking at the evaluation piece of what we're doing and truly looking at measuring our impact. And so here you have on the slide a list of some of the things that we think we should be looking at in terms of gathering data and measuring and putting some indicators in place in terms of what we think are important. We joked a little bit about the wiki because truly some of us had to kind of, well, the first thing was, what's a wiki? And then, you know, as we started using it, and I think now, you know, it's becoming a little bit more second nature, and we can see that the real beauty of the wiki is going to be in tracking the kinds of services we're providing and providing kind of that way of logging the services we're providing to faculty and a way of helping us to evaluate. I think it's also really important to say that under resources, the third point is this emergence of a creative learning community, because this really has been an emergence. I mean, we read about what is a learning community, and it's one thing to learn it in theory or to read about it, but it's another thing really to be a part of what this learning community is. And it is very much evolving into a group of individuals who learn together in a way of how can we best help to support faculty. And truly the interesting thing is, we're not departmental, we're not hierarchical, and we don't have a budget for the ETC. We really are a group of people who feel that the best thing in terms of providing services to faculty is to come together and to do it together. And so very much a self-organizing, emerging learning community. And I think that's really important, an important aspect of our process. So I think as well, in terms of what we can say for sure about our effectiveness is, as Sheila already mentioned, around the faculty development workshops. We always struggle with putting on workshops and then wondering why we think these topics are fabulous. Why are we only getting one or two faculty coming out? And now, because we're actually, in fact, someone at our institution refers to it as the STP workshop, the same 10 people. Over and over again, and that's very much right what ends up happening. But what's been really neat about this ETC responsive process is because we're so close to the faculty and we're hearing what they need, as we're working with individuals, as we're working with teams, it's our needs assessment. We start to get a sense of, here's a trend they would really like at this point to hear more about. And so we know that when we put on a workshop, we get really good attendance because the workshop is coming already out of the needs that have been determined by the faculty. And I think that's a really important part of a kind of a rethinking. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, the whole ETC is a way of rethinking faculty development out of the workshop model into much more a one-stop, user-friendly kind of supportive model in that fashion. Okay. So our ongoing evaluation, we're really doing two things. We're tracing our own growth and the change process that we're going through as an ETC so we can help perhaps others who are interested in forming this community. What have we gone through and how has it evolved? And then we want to formalize the evaluation of our services. And so one model that we're using to make that happen is called the Concerns-Based Adoption Model. Is that a familiar, so it's called CBAM. Has anyone heard of CBAM before? Yeah. Okay, so I won't make you stand up and talk about it. I'll talk a little bit about it, because I think, you know, what we're really talking about is a process of change. And I think it's really important that we frame what we're looking at in terms of what we know about change models. So the concerns-based adoption model is a model that was put together by Hall and Horde, and is very much based on what happens when faculty encounter something new in their teaching, and innovation in their teaching. And their model is that faculty actually go through 7 stages. So they start with not even knowing about the innovation. And so the awareness, even just knowing that it's out there, is the starting point. And then they move all the way through these different stages as they get more familiar with the innovation and they're actually using it. And at that point, their concern might be, how do I organize my classroom to make this work for me? All the way through to, I want to work with other faculty to try out this innovation. And then the final stage is, okay, I've used it often enough. Now I get a sense of how it can really help me in my teaching, and maybe I want to try something a little bit different, a little bit new with that innovation. So those are the stages that faculty go through. It's a change model. And we, in looking at the evaluation of our services, are very much aware of matching up the stage that the faculty are at with the kind of service that we provide. So you can well imagine that at different stages, we'll provide a very different kind of service for faculty depending on their adoption of the innovation. But at the same time, how you see it filled in this chart here is how we've been evolving ourselves as a group. So it started very much, as we started in the beginning, is saying this awareness of we're in silos. Gee, could we be doing better if we worked together? All the way down to sharing information, kind of identifying common operating procedures. And then finally, we're at the point now where, actually, which I think is pretty quick after a year and a half, of kind of refocusing our own service and saying, okay, we need to evaluate what we're doing, getting a sense of what works well, and perhaps a sense of how we ourselves can improve as a community working together. Now, with that said, we do, of course, have anecdotal evaluation responses from the faculty who really do tell us that they see the merit and the advantage to all of us working together in a way that really does help them to improve their teaching. And very much, this is an unsolicited comment that we got back. And so what we do with this kind of information is we post the story then back to the website so that faculty can start to see how other faculty are using the e-teaching collaborative, what kinds of projects they're involved in, and their enthusiasm actually for using the e-teaching collaborative. And so we started out in the beginning. I just wanted to remind you, these were some of the questions that we encouraged you to think about as we were going through about our challenges. Are they the same as yours? What are some of the strategies that you use to meet those challenges? And is there anything in particular that we've talked about that you maybe can take away back to your own institution? And so you may actually have other questions for us as well. I think we've got time to take questions. There again is the website where you can find our presentation, all of our contact information, and truly you are more than welcome to email any one of us. And if you take it home and there's a question that you think about in terms of our presentation, we'd be more than happy to answer. And we're also more than happy to take any questions at this point. Oh. Okay, so the question is, so we actually started, we have 16 clinical departments, and the question was that in going out to your different departments, who was the contact person? So kind of how did we actually get out there and how did we make that happen? So we're aware in our institution that every department has departmental meetings. And so we found out when the departmental meeting was, we contacted the department head as a starting point, and then we actually went more to the administrative secretary, as you can well imagine, because they're the ones who know what's happening and the timing and that kind of thing. And then we worked with the department heads and the support staff to figure out a good time for our team to come and present. So is that? We were an agenda item. Yep. And usually they were kind enough to put us kind of first on their agenda. And we made it very clear that it was a 15-minute presentation, and that's all we did, truly. We went in, we got in, and we got out. And it was very interesting because, as you can well imagine, we learned a lot about the cultures of the departments. So the eMERGE department was like, okay, yeah, okay, guys, get it over and done with, and away you go. The family medicine group was like, oh, let's talk some more about this and how do you function as a team. So we had a lot of fun, actually. We learned a lot ourselves as we went to the different departments. So, yeah.
Actually, we travel back and forth between our buildings a lot. The library gives us tremendous space to meet. We actually communicate. There are days when, weeks when Amy and Sarah and I are communicating daily, and we're either on the phone or emailing. I've tried to set it up now so that I have certain days that I work on ETC projects and then certain days where other projects happen. Interestingly enough, some of those other projects are becoming ETC projects because we are anxious to show technology to faculty as a solution. So that would probably, does that answer your question? We talk sometimes daily. Other times, weeks will go by if a project has been on hold or if we're at a certain stage and then waiting for another stage to begin. Yes, as a matter of fact. Sarah is, so it says, do we have other responsibilities in addition to our ETC? Actually, yes. Sarah's a librarian and has all of the duties that a librarian has. Amy is a web developer with all kinds of other technological duties. And I work sometimes on large, large curriculum projects that... that where the technology doesn't come in until a little bit later. So yes, we do. But interestingly enough, I think I can speak, Amy and I were actually talking about this. Amy was saying how it's been really helpful for her to put an educational focus onto the implementation of technology. It's been very helpful for me to put a technological focus on the implementation of educational theory. So it's been, and Sarah concurs, and she actually straddles all worlds, and so it's been hugely helpful for us, and it actually improves our other projects.
Just to add to that as well, truly this has been kind of a sideline of all of our jobs. And so in the Office of Health Sciences Education, our mandate is to enhance teaching and learning through scholarship and innovation. So innovation is one little piece, but I think that where the ETC is really going to come into play nicely too is in the scholarship piece. Because we ask, why would faculty get involved in doing some of these pretty intensive projects? And we're really trying to promote scholarship as a way of career advancement. And so if we can start to tie in the work on these projects with the evaluation. So we've actually had some faculty who have successfully published their teaching innovations. So if we can start to bring the scholarship piece in as well. So I think the ETC becomes kind of a complement to all of the other jobs that we do also. Yeah, I think so. The comment was that it's one thing to go to departmental meetings, but it's the department chairs that really have the impact and the say so, and it's really good to get their buy-in as well. And I agree with you completely. People are probably getting very tired of, we've got bookmarks and we've got, you know, wherever we go, we're talking about the ETC. And so certainly with the more senior meetings as well, it's highlighted there also. So you're absolutely right. I think a multi-pronged approach is probably the best route to go. Oh, that's a good question.
Within our own university.
Yeah. So within Queen's University. Oh, I'm sorry. Have we had an opportunity to share this model with other similar kinds of centers that would do similar kinds of activities? So you're right, like in the Faculty of Health Sciences, we have this unique setup. But at Queen's University, as a larger university, we also have the Center for Teaching and Learning. We also have a much larger library service, and we also have an information technology service. And I don't know that we formally shared this model with them, but they... it would be a very good idea because they tend to operate kind of individually as well. This, I think, is our first opportunity that we've had to really share this outside of our own institution.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Do you want to talk about EOS at all?
We were invited to a technology conference, the Eastern Ontario conference, and we did talk. We had just started, so we had been 6 months into it, and we were just so excited about how well it was working, and we were also so thrilled to have each other. Actually, ironically, most of us had just started in our positions within the past 3 years, and so we wanted to share that with the world. I remember that conference vividly, and it'll be really interesting for me to go back and look at what we said. However, I do remember the question saying, is it working? Is it working? And we said, yes, it is. Yes, it is. And then we realized we had to go back and document how it was working. So that's our process now. In terms of sharing it with others, Amy and I meet with all the IT and educational developers for Queens, and we have a list of topics, and the ETC is one of those topics. So it's a tremendous idea, and I would like to share it more, and I would like to hear about other people who are doing similar types of breaking out of the silos, and to see how you've overcome some of the hurdles that come with that. Are there any other questions?
Thanks, everyone. This was a terrific presentation. And once again, I encourage you to fill out the evaluation forms. Thanks a lot.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Outsourced hosting of multi-format digital media content is available from Real's own CDN, the Real Broadcast Network. Information at rbn.com.